This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Local totals from all 382 voting areas have now been certified and announced, and I have therefore been able to certify the result of the referendum on the UK's membership of the European Union.
Good morning. There's no hiding the fact that we wanted a different outcome of yesterday's referendum. I am fully aware of how serious or even dramatic this moment is politically. And there's no way of predicting all the political consequences of this event, especially for the UK. It is a historic moment, but for sure not a moment for hysterical reactions. I want to reassure everyone that we are prepared also for this negative scenario. As you know, the EU is not only a fair weather project.
I feel honoured to have served it, and I will do everything I can in future to help this great country succeed.
Good evening from a shell-shocked Westminster. David Cameron's premiership has ended after Remain lost the referendum he called to resolve his own party's civil war over Europe, which he himself said put at risk the national interest. The immediate economic and political consequences tonight are grave and the future deeply uncertain, but a majority of the country has voted for Britain to go it alone.
You're listening to the Evening Edition, and I'm Umar Paganampike Pagan. In what has been an historic referendum vote, Britain has opted out of the EU last Friday. In a tightly fought race, 51.9% voted in favour of leaving, while the remaining 48.1% voted to stay. The aftershocks that followed reverberated throughout the UK, Europe and around the world. Adding on to UK's woes are Prime Minister David Cameron's resignation, problems within Britain's political parties, a very upset Scotland, and the sterling being at its lowest since 1985. And while the UK is trying to make sense of it all, are relations between the UK and the other countries in the world affected? That's what we want to find out today, and I'm speaking to Her Excellency Victoria Trudell, British High Commissioner to Malaysia. Your Excellency, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about this today.
It's my pleasure.
As you well know, Malaysians have such a strong connection to the United Kingdom. A lot of us have studied there. We may have family and friends there. So I wanted to ask you what your initial reactions were when you were watching it on television or streaming it online when you heard the news. Because I, for one, you know, watching David Dimbleby on BBC make that announcement, I was filled with apprehension and heartbreak. And only just because I have very strong feelings towards the UK.
Well, I'm pleased that you have a strong feeling towards the UK, and that's great. Look, because of my line of work, I had gone through all the possible scenarios. So in many respects, I and all ambassadors and high commissioners around the world were preparing for one or other outcome. So to some degree, it wasn't such a shock or a surprise. In our line of work, we are ready as government servants to get on with making the best of whichever result was presented to us by the British people. So certainly when I heard, it was about, right, now we know what the British people have said, now it's time to follow this through and make the best of the outcome we've been delivered. I don't deny that it is the outcome that makes it a little bit more difficult for us, simply because of the level of global interest and the reality of the impact of this decision.
Just on a complete side note, I have to say, the one thing I did notice, though, I think the BBC were very smart in having David Dimbleby, because I think his presence there felt somewhat reassuring, especially for all of us who may have lived there and seen him on television for such a long time.
Well, we just have these amazing, incredible journalists who have a lot of credibility and authority. And at moments like this, whether it's a general election or referendum, it is these incredible journalists we have that help us through digesting the results. And that's why an open and free media is so important in any democracy.
Absolutely. So let me bring things closer to home. What sort of impact, if any, will the Brexit have on Malaysia?
Well, in terms of our bilateral relationship, that between the UK and Malaysia, quite frankly, I don't think it makes any difference. But I'll come back to that point. Clearly, the result has created some volatility in the global market. So we have seen some impact on stock exchanges around the world. Malaysia is no exception, where we have seen some fluctuations and movements as a result of that. And likewise, on the foreign exchange markets, we're seeing an impact there as well. So, you know, the ringgit has taken a slight dip, as have other currencies, not least sterling. But in time, the market will adjust when people absorb the information and actually understand what steps are being taken by the British government and by the British government with the European Union and within the European Union in particular. So I think what we've seen in the last 72 hours was to be expected. And in many respects, we have been preparing for that possibility. And as you may have heard earlier today, the Chancellor of the Exchequer in the UK, George Osborne, made a statement to reassure the markets on the steps that he has taken.
What about the everyday Malaysian? I'm sure you've noticed on social media, there's been a lot of noise. I guess people are concerned about travel to the UK, study in the UK, and also Malaysians working there with work permits. Is there going to be any tangible effect on those individuals?
No, not at all, because our visa regime and requirement for work permits doesn't change because of this decision. And the first point, I'll come back to some of the specific issues you touched on, but the first point I would make to all Malaysians, for the time being, Britain remains a member of the European Union. There is a process for us to go through that can take at least 2 years. In that time frame, before whatever new relationship we negotiate and agree with Europe comes into place, it is business as usual. So where you need visas to visit the UK, to work there, for example, you will continue to do so just as you always have done. Where you don't need visas because you're a tourist and a visitor, you won't need it. And actually, for students, the UK is still a top destination. You know, our institutions haven't changed overnight because of this decision. Some of our institutions are 600-800 years old. They predated our membership of the European Union, and they will postdate whatever the outcome is of our new relationship with Europe. So fundamentally, it doesn't make that difference. You know, and I too keep across social media. And I've seen a lot of people saying, well, actually, you know, with the pound being a little bit weak and soft at the moment, this is a good time to invest. Student fees are going to be cheaper. So you're getting that sort of reaction as well. And I have spoken to a lot of senior Malaysian businessmen in the last few hours, talking to them about their investments in the UK and their confidence in the British market. And like all business people, they look at Britain for Britain's sake. And they are making investments not for the short term, not for the medium term, but for the long term. And over a long-term spread, you look at the risks in the global economy as well as in the market that you're investing in. And you make a judgment on the long-term return of your investment. So most business people I have spoken to in Malaysia are pretty straightforward and pretty pragmatic. But right now, when the pound is weaker, it's a good time to travel to the UK. You're getting more ringgits. You're getting more pounds for your ringgits.
That is exactly what I told my parents.
There you are. So we're on the same page there.
We are. I just wanted to get a bit of a 101 about, I guess, the politics on the ground in the UK, because I think a lot of Malaysians still find it somewhat complicated in understanding the results of the vote, because it feels like this is a vote that wasn't rooted along party lines or ideologies. It seemed to span across whether you were a Tory member or a Labour member. It didn't seem to matter. Everyone seemed to go their own way.
Yeah, but that's what referendums are for. Referendums are where it is an issue of constitutional importance for the nation as a whole, where you will have common purpose across party lines, across different demographics in society. And that's why in a democracy we use referendum as a means to reach a view on what politicians and the government of the day therefore need to do, because that is the will of the people. So for us, we have used referendum to resolve big questions. That is quite different to a period of elections to elect a government and who leads that government, which is about which party do you want to entrust, because on your assessment of what the political parties are offering, you're choosing the political party that you believe offers you the best healthcare, the best education, the best economic, the best defense and security policies of the day. And of course, parties are either to the right or to the left, but effectively they fight for the center ground, and that sort of populist spread that their policies will gain the broadest traction across society as a whole. So they are distinct processes, referendum and general elections.
I'm speaking today to Her Excellency Victoria Tredell, British High Commissioner to Malaysia. She joins us this evening to speak about the effects of the Brexit in the UK and locally as well. Stay tuned to the evening edition as we continue our conversation on Britain's historic referendum vote. You're listening to BFM 89.9.
Bombing frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to the evening edition. I'm Uma Paganampike Pagan. We're speaking today with Her Excellency Victoria Tredell, British High Commissioner to Malaysia, about the UK's historic decision last Friday to end its membership with the EU. Given the voter demographics of what we saw between the 51.9% and the 48.1%, there seems to be this notion, or at least this perception, that Britain is a country that's divided. And I see it too. And I can't come to terms with whether it is actually more divided than ever before or whether it's just been amplified by social media and the internet.
I think social media and the internet will distort a picture, as well as, you know, magnification is a form of distortion. So let's think of it on those lines. I think these are issues that have always been there, and it is an issue where there wasn't clarity between one or other option. And because it was a divisive issue for the country as a whole, including within political parties, again, that is why you choose a referendum to resolve it. And actually, the statement of democracy, you had people from different political parties joining forces on one or other side of the debate. And that's good that you can show there is sort of bipartisan approach in whichever camp that it was. And I know it's a difficult thing to comprehend and understand sometimes, but that is the reality. This was an issue where even within families, people couldn't agree, never mind from town to town, county to county, home nation to home nation.
And do you think there was enough awareness among the British people before they voted?
Look, I can't comment on what the general population and their level of awareness was. But quite frankly, when you have a democracy, I'm not saying whether it, you know, individuals understand that, but when you have a democracy, frankly, it is the responsibility of each citizen to be as informed as they should be in order to reach the decision in how they are going to cast their vote. I do not believe there was any shortage of information on both sides of the divide, nor is there, quite frankly, in an internet age, a shortage of any information that you want to tap into if you can find the time to research. So, you know, in my view, there is no excuse for anyone to turn around and say, I didn't really know what I was doing. In a modern age where the majority of people have a smartphone, quite frankly, with information at the tip of your fingers, it is incumbent on anyone in any country, in any democracy, to research the facts and to decide what they're going to vote for and to understand why.
So in the immediate aftermath of the vote, emotions were running high and there were lots of statements coming out of Scotland and Northern Ireland. I was going to ask you what this actually means for relations between Scotland and Britain and Northern Ireland and England. I mean, what happens with the United Kingdom?
Look, that is a completely different issue and agenda. But even Nicola Sturgeon said in her statement, the other countries of the United Kingdom will always be Scotland's closest friends and allies, and that is not going to change. You're right. Things are quite heated at the moment. The emotion of the outcome is something that people are still absorbing. I think it is important for all of us to have a period of reflection and cooling down and actually thinking about the opportunity and the challenges ahead, how we work together to get the best result from this decision handed to us by the British people. How do we get the best for the whole of the United Kingdom in that new relationship with Europe? Until we have started that process, I don't think it's possible for one or other part of the UK to say whether they want to be in or out of that new dynamic. So I do think it will take time. I do think that we need to consider what that new relationship is with Europe. And certainly our Prime Minister, Mr. Cameron, and other ministers, the Foreign Minister, Philip Hammond, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, George Osborne, have all been very clear that we start the work today to determine what that best outcome is for Britain. And Britain has always been open to the world and open for business to the world. We have one of the most open economies. You talk to any foreign investor in Britain, they choose Britain because of that open economy, that open environment with clear legislations and laws, corporate tax, good access to skills, talented workforce, some of the best universities in the world with research and development. That is what Britain is, always has been, and always will be. So I think the job is to have the best outcome, remind people that Britain is open to the world and open for business. You know, we have big plans for our work here in Malaysia, and I welcome the statements from your trade minister, your defense minister, and Prime Minister Najib, making it very clear that Britain is an old friend, continues to be a good friend. We have a lot of collaborations and partnerships. We're working hard to build up our trade and investment between our two countries. That doesn't stop. We're working hard to secure the security and stability of our two nations and the global environment in which we live. That work doesn't stop. We're working hard at the political level, government to government, on the bigger gender issues facing this world, and that doesn't stop.
Your Excellency, there have also been quite a few reports about, well, buyer's remorse and petitions and all of this stuff going on. Is there any real possibility of a second referendum? And if so, would you be able to tell me how that even happens?
Well, my short answer is that no, there is nothing to allow for a second referendum. The Prime Minister has been very clear. This was a one-off, once-in-a-generation referendum. The outcome was clear. And I think what we have to focus on is not whether there is another referendum, but actually when the transition takes place and a new prime minister takes up the role and at a time of our choosing within what we are allowed to do in the relationship with Europe, and triggers Article 50, which is simply the start of discussions towards what that new relationship with Europe is. So, you know, I think what people have to wait and see is what it is we negotiate in this new reality. And if we get the good deal for Britain that our government are determined to secure, that is the way we will move forward. You know, all our other relationships internationally, you know, Britain is one of a tiny handful of countries with a huge diplomatic network overseas. We have something like 267 different diplomatic missions across some 164, 165 countries in the world. We remain a member of the G7, the G20, a member of the UN Security Council, a member and an active member of NATO. Of those membership groups, Britain is the only country that spends 2% of our GDP on defense and security. We are the only country of those membership groups that spends 0.2% of our GDP on helping others through our international development programs. So we're not going to stop doing all of that. We will be a friend and an ally in the defense and security of nations around the world. We will be active on trade and investment around the world, as we always have been. And, you know, even you look at a country like Malaysia, there is no EU FTA currently with Malaysia. So actually the trade between Britain and Malaysia is not affected or driven through an EU prism. So actually our business continues in the way it does. Our political engagement continues in the way it does. You know, we're a member of other membership groups, the UN. We are a member of the Commonwealth, a membership group of 53 nations. That doesn't change. That continues.
That was Her Excellency Victoria Tredell, British High Commissioner to Malaysia, about the UK's decision to Brexit. After this, I'll be speaking to her about the political turmoil the decision has left in Britain's parties. Stay tuned to the evening edition. You're listening to BFM 89.9.
Banish fraudulent manoeuvres. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to the evening edition. I'm Uma Paganampike Pagan. Joining me today, Her Excellency Victoria Tredell, British High Commissioner to Malaysia. We've been talking about how the Brexit will affect UK-Malaysia relations, and within the UK, how its other regions have been dealing with the decision. But there's also chaos among Britain's political parties, which seems to be plunging the country into further uncertainty. Given the traction of the Leavers, is there a fear that parties like UKIP are going to gain in popularity?
You know, if we look at the British democratic system, the parties that have always governed are the parties that have persuaded people. They have the best range of policies across the things that really matter to ordinary citizens. And if you ask British people, which party, you know, what are the things that you're going to be looking at? They will be looking at things like healthcare, like education, like the economic policies that they are looking for. They tend not to vote for single agenda parties. And if you like, the single agenda that we have just dealt with means that people will be looking for political leadership in the future for the government that can best secure Britain's interests in the world across all these key themes of our society that are important. So an outward-looking Britain and a Britain that has the domestic policies to look after people in Britain.
We've been reading quite a few reports about an increase in racial incidents and xenophobia since Friday. What have you heard, and what can you tell us about that?
Well, I have to say I haven't heard that. And I'm sorry that some people will write about these incidents and again, amplify them beyond the context that they happen in. And, you know, and I've been monitoring UK news channels, as you would expect, very, very closely. And I don't recognize what you say. And of course, on a personal level, I'm in touch with my own friends and family in the UK. And I don't hear that from them either.
Oh, that's reassuring, yeah.
So, you know, Britain, let us remember, Britain is a modern multiracial country. And, you know, if we go back to the openness of Britain, who can tell us that we're racist when you have the mayor of London that we have, when you look at some of the members of our cabinet? You know, we celebrate our diversity and our inclusivity. And let us not forget, this is a Britain that has a British High Commissioner in Malaysia who was born in Ipoh and migrated to Britain when she was 8 years old. So the Britain that some people paint is not the Britain of my personal experience. For me, Britain has been inclusive. It has celebrated its diversity. It has welcomed people from around the world. Look at some of our cities. Look at London. You know, whenever we have an election in London, we have to produce election material in multiple languages. This is a Britain that is welcoming. And of course, in any country, we see racial tensions from time to time. For the good people in society, we have to stand up and say, not in our name. We have to say that our strength is in our diversity. You know, whether you're here in Malaysia or whether you're in the UK or whether you're in the US or anywhere else in the world, the modern world, because of globalization, is seeing migration of people, and it has been seeing this for decades. So, you know, the Britain I know, the Britain that has given me opportunity, the Britain that has given some of our leading politicians who were first generation from migrant parents the opportunity to be in government, is the Britain that I celebrate.
And finally, do you fear any lasting antagonism between Europe and the UK?
I don't think so. Obviously, things are heated at the moment, but fundamentally, we need each other. We have always been there for Europe, if you think about our history. And if you think of, you know, the fact that Britain has been the strongest economy in Europe, they need a strong Britain for a strong Europe, whether or not we are in the EU. And because of our economic ties, it is really important that we continue to stabilize and continue to be successful. So, you know, our closest partners will always be within Europe. Our closest partners around the world will always be our closest partners, because fundamentally, at the end of the day, we share the same democratic values.
Your Excellency, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you very much.
I've been speaking about the Brexit with Her Excellency Victoria Tredell, British High Commissioner to Malaysia. After this, I catch up with His Excellency Luc Vandebon, Ambassador and Head of Delegation of the European Union to Malaysia, and find out what his take is on the Brexit. Stay tuned to the Evening Edition. This is BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to the Evening Edition. I'm Uma Pagan Amphike Pagan. Continuing our conversation about the Brexit, I'm joined now by His Excellency Luc Vandebon, Ambassador and Head of Delegation to the European Union to Malaysia. He's going to share some of his thoughts with us about Britain's decision to leave the European Union. Your Excellency, I just wanted to start off by asking you how the Brexit will affect us here in Malaysia, if at all.
Well, that's a good question. I think probably not that much. You know that Asian countries have voiced some concern. I think China is one of them that said that they would be very carefully checking the ripple effects of what is going on in Europe for the time being. You know that the stock markets got a serious hit. Also the currencies, specifically the British pound, but not only the British pound. So with the exception of that, I think that there is not that much to fear for the economy here in Malaysia.
What are some of the major effects with the UK leaving the EU?
Well, first of all, this came as a surprise, as a shock to the system. You know that we have this Article 50 in the European treaties inserted, basically that deals with organizing what needs to be done when a member state, if a member state ever would decide to leave the European Union. I think quite honestly that when this article was written, nobody really expected that we would ever use it. As you know, we have other countries that are knocking on our door to become a member.
That's right.
We usually are a lot more concerned and busy with that than with trying to figure out what we should do if ever one of the member states would have taken the decision to leave. And that has happened now. We find this rather devastating for the Union. It's not a good thing, obviously. It diminishes the importance of the European Union's standing in the world. You probably know that until now, or let's say until Friday, the European Union was the largest trading bloc in the world. We account for 22% of global trade, world trade. Without the UK, that percentage drops to somewhere in between 18 and 19, according to the first calculations that I have been able to get hold of. So that makes us the second largest trading bloc after the United States, still before Japan and China. But we got a little beating in that respect, and that's obviously not good. On the other hand, it is, I think, personally, most devastating of all for the United Kingdom. And you only have to see at the direct effects it has on the stock markets, on the FTSE, on the pound, which has never been as low since the 70s, I guess. So that's all not good. And basically what it has done, it has created a lot of uncertainty, and that is never good for the markets or for the economies. So that is one of the reasons why we would like to limit this period of uncertainty in time as much as possible and get on with, as soon as everybody is ready, the two parties, the European Union and the United Kingdom, and start applying Article 50, which means start negotiations to figure out how this future relationship between the Union and the UK is going to be.
And that's what I read, the report saying that the EU is keen to move rather quickly with Britain's exit. I mean, is that all in the name of economic prudence?
Well, it's in the name of there was a decision democratically taken following democratic processes. The United Kingdom has decided to leave the European Union. For us, there is no reason why we then also should not immediately apply that and get on with business, because as long as that is not out of the way, uncertainty will prevail, and that is not good. It's not good for the markets, and it's not good for the overall global system, basically. I think that everybody is now very concerned with what is going to be the future of the European Union, how we are going to continue, how this is going to impact on world trade relations, on FTAs, and all of that. So the sooner we can figure all of that out, the better. And that is why there are a number of member states in the EU that would really be very keenly seeking this Article 50 being applied and negotiations to start. I understand that from the European Union side, there is a task force set up with a person nominated to lead that task force. And I understand from what I hear from Brussels that we're basically ready to start with these negotiations whenever the United Kingdom decides to do so.
The media have also suggested that the EU needs to tread carefully, just out of fear that these dealings might encourage other member countries to follow suit, if not really to do it, then just to get a better deal. What are your thoughts on the matter?
Well, again, I mean, this is all, I think that this, that might eventually be a possibility, you know, that there are some tendencies in some of the member states, specifically with the more nationalistically oriented parties in some of the member states, to, you know, voice concern or their discontent with how the European Union is functioning. I think the sooner we make it clear how relationships are going to be with a member state that has decided to leave, the clearer it's going to be for everybody what eventual steps they could take. take, or if it is opportune to do so or not. So I think it's in everybody's interest, including and not in the least in the European Union's interest, to get to some clarity as soon as possible about how we can get on, just to ease markets and to ease member states and to make sure that this doesn't turn into a precedent.
I'm going to ask you to speculate for a second, if Scotland holds a second referendum and they do gain independence, is it a U-turn of sort in the sense that does Scotland actually have to reapply to become a member of the EU, or do they get an easy pass because they were a member before?
I'm not a specialist in European law. I don't know what exactly needs to be done for that. But as you say yourself, they were part of a country that was a member of the European Union, and that is also, if I understood correctly from the Scottish Chief Minister, the reason why they would be keen to have a second referendum now, because they set up the premises, the conditions under which this first referendum was held have completely changed. At the time, it was, are we going to be independent from the United Kingdom that is part of the European Union or not? And that has now completely changed. They're not anymore. They do not want to be part of the European Union. So from that point of view, I can understand the urge in Scotland who really wants to stay in the Union, to make work of this and to come to an arrangement as soon as possible. As you know, in Scotland, the vote was largely in favor of remaining in the EU, and they would like to continue that. I'm sure that there will be some favorable arrangements or conditions created for a case like that. How exactly that pans out from a legalistic point of view, to be quite honest, I don't know.
Ambassador, do you fear any lasting antagonism between Europe and the United Kingdom?
No, I don't think so. I think that people are rather upset because we like our European integration project, and it's a little bit of a setback. I don't think that we have to overestimate whatever is going on now. We are still 27 out of the 28 countries that are seriously convinced that what we're doing is the right thing, and we want to get on with our European integration project and deepen it and strengthen it and all of that. But it is a setback, and so therefore the sooner we get out of this mess, if I can call it like that, the better.
Thank you so much, Your Excellency, for coming on and talking to us.
You're very welcome.
That was His Excellency Luc van der Bon, Ambassador and Head of Delegation of the European Union to Malaysia. We've been speaking to him about the effects the Brexit has had on the EU. If you've missed any part of this program, head over to bfm.my and download the podcast. This has been the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.